The title of this session is Thinking Politics Freed from the State. The term absolute democracy originally comes from the philosopher Baruch Spinoza, who imagined absolute democracy to be a form of absolute state. Hart and Negri are extending beyond where Spinoza was willing to go. They conceived it quite differently, as being beyond the state. They see a contradiction between democracy and modern representative government. They write, democracy and representation stand at odds with one another. When our power, the power of everyone, is transferred to a group of rulers, then we all no longer rule. We are separated from power and government. However, they continue, despite this contradiction, representation came to define modern democracy to such an extent that it has become practically impossible to think democracy without also thinking some form of representation. In this session, we will follow this direction, thinking politics beyond the state. We will focus on politics freed from the state. It follows different paths of struggles and alternative organizing in the context of the declining global capitalism and the crisis of representative democracy and parliamentarism. Slavoj Žižek says, you invent utopias when you're in deep shit and cannot do otherwise. So in this sense, I assume the current state of capitalism and representative democracy should be and become more and more a fertile soil for utopian thinking. The first person here on the panel to present is Nicolien van Harskamp on my left. Nicolien is an artist whose work addresses the function and power of the spoken word and its ability to influence perception and shape thought, both of which are instrumental to politics, as she writes. She will talk about the theoretical tradition of anarchism and present her most recent project, Yours in Solidarity, that addresses the contemporary history of anarchism through a correspondence archive. Her work is a great example of how historic material can be reconfigured and put together in a way that it becomes of importance for today's debates and struggles. Yours of Solidarity was presented in different stages in various exhibitions internationally, and we are also very glad that she will participate in the show Absolute Democracy, Carlos and I put together, that will open on Saturday noon. Nicolien.
Thank you, Oliver. Thank you for inviting me. I'd just like to introduce the work here on Solidarity, and it's a very long work, there's a lot of quantity in it, so do go and see it in Glotar if you have a chance. I'll just explain a little bit how it was made. The work is about anarchism, but it starts somewhere else. It starts in a really personal place. I don't know if any of you have ever gone back to the moment where you first realized you were interested in a certain type of politics, or maybe your political ideas changed or formed, and when were they even formed? By whom, by what? I remember myself quite clearly that when I was a student, I kind of started working in an anarchist publishing place, very small place. And one of the people in that place was somebody called Karl Max Kröger. He was then in his 50s. And he was an anarchist of the kind that I still really appreciate, and sometimes I walk into anarchists of that kind. It's the kind that's not affiliated or aligned anywhere in particular. And that is just as an incredible interest in the thoughts of others, and it doesn't really matter where they go, although he always tries to convince everybody of his own somehow. Carl's politics were really into happened within interaction, not even education, but interaction. And all he did was write letters for people all over the world and try to find out what their lives were like, what their politics were like, how one would affect the other, And obviously a lot of these people were sort of free thinkers, anarchists of all different stripes. He did this between 88 and 99, and it's a very interesting time for many reasons, but also for anarchism. It was the end of the communist empires, it was the end of apartheid, but also big changes in South America and in India at that time. And anarchist groups kind of started to reshape or reappear, and there was also, of course, new things happening in Western Europe. I was one of the people who wrote letters with Karl in those years. And he died in 1999, unexpectedly, and all his letters were brought to the International Institute for Social History, which is a place in Amsterdam that houses lots of material from many, many different struggles all over the world throughout the centuries. Initially, I thought to try and find my own letters back and see what I was thinking in those days. And as I was trying to find my own letters in that enormous collection of unsorted paperworks and envelopes, I realized that I could only find one of my own letters in the course of one day. And I looked through a lot of other material and I thought, okay, if I want to learn something about myself in that time, perhaps I can also do it through the letters of others. Ask for permission with the legacy holders of this archive to make a film, and they agreed. So I then spent over 2 years going to the archive every now and then, but quite regularly. And this is what it looks like here on the screen, roughly. There's like many, many boxes like that. Any envelope, any time, from any country, with any name on it, if there's a name on it, open it, read it, and see that there is not only sort of factual material about certain groups, organizations, political situation in specific countries, but because it's handwritten, there's a chronology that is quite different from, for example, essay writing or publishing or even emailing. This is pre-email. People mix up their political sort of messages completely with their personal, not only opinions, but also their personal doubts, questions, developments almost. And this is a quality that you hardly see in any sort of publication or even website, really. And of course, it's private information, but by reading it, I learned a lot about that time and about these people. The archive stretches 10 years, so there's actually some sort of coming-of-age stories or political developments where you can read how people go from one place to the next over the course of 10 years while the world is changing around them, notably in Eastern Europe, former Yugoslavia, and so on. What I did was hand copy these letters, not bit by bit, but I took quotes that I particularly like. I took information that I might be able to cross-reference at some point with the letters of others. Please note that this archive is not sorted in any way, so I was the first one to touch it. I think it's really hard to see, but this is just kind of my notes. And it took me 2 years to collect everything, and then I found, through sorting and analyzing, 400 individual authors, who 60 of them I started to really like already in the process of copying the letter, so I had almost images in my mind of who these people might be. And I made a folder, like a file for each of them. I translated my notes. I wrote explanations of the specific strand of anarchism attached to it, because some people are really affiliated sort of on the anarcho-syndicalist side. It was early days of reclaiming the streets, there was a little of that. There was some, all the kind of abbreviations, I ended up with the same kind of thing. And also I took a handwriting sample from every single person that I wanted to work with. I analyzed it through a very sort of standard handwriting analysis website. This information, this little pack, I gave to an actor of the right nationality, estimate current age, so if the last day of writing they were in university, then I would say, okay, maybe they are in their early 40s, I would try to find an actor of that age. And I gave them this material, and I chose not to go and try to find these people, the original people back, because it's a whole different sort of game. And also I wanted to make it fiction, because in fiction you can do more wishful thinking in many ways, and I wanted to make a little propaganda somehow, maybe. So here you see three actors as they are in the studio with me. I spend about a day with each of them. Just starting off, I didn't cast them in advance, so I just sat with them and started from zero. Only from the 60 people I work with, only three had experience or interest in anarchism. But the actors, because they were great, they had skills in terms of language, in terms of physical abilities, intelligence, and also the experience, of course, in their own countries. With politics or without politics in the same age. So they could really come a very, very long way in creating these personas. And as soon as we had somebody who was, we formed somebody who was kind of believable or detailed enough, we then tried to have an interview together. So I would ask them about their time and they would ask me about my time in this era. Of course, it's a huge amount of material, and I transcribed my favorite bits and invited my favorite characters to try to see what happens when they would meet today to people. A lot of them did meet originally. And I wrote a script for a film called Yours in Solidarity, where these people interact with each other and talk with each other as if they were coming together today in their current age. This is a very long process, making this film, and as I was starting it, there was no such thing as Occupy, no spring revolutions, no square occupations, and also the anarchist response to these occupations and these events have been quite strong, also in the sort of old-style anarchism and then new-style anarchism. So, of course, these people are discussing these things as well. I picked a little excerpt where they're actually talking about a little bit older things, and also where you can see one of the very important things within anarchism, as far as I'm concerned, also as it relates to making art and working as an artist, is that nobody is able to escape their personality when they talk about their politics, and there's an incredible beauty in there that I've always liked to kind of at least incorporate in anything I do. Here's a little clip. It's about 5 minutes, which we have.
Why should I propose anything? You know, there is such a great power in all forms of art, self-expression, avant-garde. You name it. You need to become a wild, free-spirited individual in order to undermine the system itself. Just because of no purpose to live.
Undermine post-socialism.
Yeah, of course. You can call me whatever you can see. To me easily, I know. You can call me an eagerness,
terrorist,
The task. Yes. Well, in a nutshell, it's what the name implies. It's an area of space and time in which the people who choose to occupy it exert autonomy over as many aspects of their lives as they can. Uprisings, pockets of time and space in which individuals, however briefly, could experience total freedom.
I would say in 68 we had a fine.
Bourgeoisie, it's not an affair on the little small declamation of freedom. These are moral decadences. The private life doesn't exist. It is an invention from the bourgeoisie. In Madrid, for example, back in the past, in the 20s, there was this household, normally the granny, the woman. They were taking care of the houses. There was one person bringing the meat, another person bringing the potatoes. And then she made the soup, and then we all eat from there. We can survive. Some people otherwise will die. Some people die, some people will survive. And this is the beginning of oppression. You have, I don't have, and I think we're better than this.
That was over in the 1920s. And I think it's important to acknowledge that when people are given an opportunity to build their own lives, they always build in enough space to have pleasure, ordinary pleasurable pursuits.
Douglas, you wouldn't agree with that.
I mean, the drinking worker doesn't think and the thinking worker doesn't drink.
Let me ask, what is the result of Buddhist temporary autonomy? Commercial parties, materialism, a festival of resistance, no? Human freedom is not the same thing as egoism and laziness. Self-discipline is desirable in any community, but this is not the same thing as authority. Authority is the right to command obedience. By the way, who first invented authority? Religion.
British societies have always had their leaders in the form of the rainmaker, the shaman, the medicine man. And they sought to profit from what they knew about nature to dominate others and communicated this special knowledge into a chosen few. And that's where you've got all religion and also all art and science begins with a hidden mystery.
There's nothing wrong with a hidden mystery. I mean, we all have our own fight with God, without even Proudhon at some place. Oh, you don't. You think that's crazy?
Yes, of course. Yes. Of course you think. Small people tend to make everything small. But nothing is small. No, Kropotkin was a prince. You know, the fact that he was a prince is not so special. Of course not. But that he became an anarchist as a prince. Yes. He came from the sort of people that ruled the world for ages. And it gives people a kind of responsibility for the world. I found out that I have some blue blood. It comes from my Belgian great-grandmother. I think that I understand Kropotkin very well. Yes, I think so, yes.
Thank you very much.